Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. All right, we broke the bank this week. I can't believe I heard this question. I knew I was going to hear this question. I heard this question. Somebody asked me, Dr. Medici, what herb do I take for the Ebola virus? I won't mention that person's name, but I'm going to dedicate this show to them. Not because I'm going to tell you what herb to take for the Ebola virus. If you follow this show, you know that's the last way I'd think about approaching Ebola. More importantly, and probably a lot more relevant, is we're coming into flu season. And I wouldn't tell you, or I wouldn't focus on what herb are you going to take for flu season either. And you'll understand why in 60 minutes. Really, once the flu started, it's too late. Prevention, grandma's old wisdom, prevention is worth the pound of cure, but we don't prevent because we don't really understand why we need to prevent. What are the mechanisms that set the terrain so when that virus comes into your body, and what's a virus anyway versus a bacteria, what's the terrain? What are the variables in the terrain, in the environment that that flu starts to set into that really determine whether or not you're going to get sick and how sick you're going to get and how fast you're going to recover? That's what I want to get into today. And yes, we'll do a little bit on the different quick fix remedies that work. Well, they work halfway. You've got to do your half, which is to not get yourself too run down. Because once you're too run down, you're wasting your money on the herbs. The herbs can only do so much, and you're going to get the science behind that. So let's get to it. First of all, just want to cover the basics. When I say a virus, do we understand a virus versus a bacteria? That's the key. Virus, in fact, pictured number three. As always, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. That is picture number three. Now, if you take a look at that, how a virus works. First of all, is a virus a one-celled organism? Complete. Membrane, mitochondria, nucleus, so on and so forth. And the answer, of course, is no. A virus is very simplistic. Few things are more simplistic in the body that the immune system has to deal with than a virus. And there you have it, picture number three, how a virus works. It's going to find a receptor site. It's going to find a receptor site on the membrane of a cell. And you don't have a lot of defense against that. That's just the edge that the viruses have. Once it finds that receptor site, it sinks its teeth in. You can't stop that too easily either. Once it sinks its teeth in, it's going to eat its way through the membrane. Now, those essential fatty acids, great for boosting immunity. You don't usually hear that. But those fatty acids in there set the resilience of that membrane. So if you're EFA deficient, and that's another show, and you know all about the essential fatty acids anyway, the omega-9s, the omega-3s, the omega-6s, the DHAs, the EPAs, another show. But if you've got the resilience in that cell membrane, once that virus starts to eat inside and through the membrane, despite being on a receptor site, you've at least got a little bit of protection. So pack that one into your understanding. Now, once that virus gets on the inside, it drops in to the DNA and begins to infect your own DNA sequences so that your DNA starts producing the virus's DNA. And this is, of course, transacted through what we call messenger RNA. So you're going to see over there in step number two, virus RNA invades the cell nucleus and takes over. To step number three, you're looking at the pictures now. If you're new to the show, get on the website, straighttalk.cc, and look inside under literature, and you're going to look at immediately picture number 3. Just click it and blow it up if this is your first time on the show. So once that virus gets inside, we're going to move then to picture number 3. To picture number 3, step 3, the viral RNA. The viral RNA starts duplicating, not the messenger RNA of the cell. The cell now has been polluted and taken over by the virus, and this replication of the messenger RNA goes on uncontrollably to the point where the cell bursts. And you got to take that in to understand what the flu is, because this mechanism that I'm delineating, you have to understand all the different things you're going to do to combat the flu and why one works for one person and it doesn't work for the other person. All right, so once you've got that replication pattern and it bursts the cell, now we've got a cell effectively that, hang on one second, guys. I'm sorry about that. We just had a little technical problem I had to fix. All right. Once we've got the messenger RNA duplicated, the cell bursts. Now, that lysing of the cell is what you're going to begin to experience as the symptom. The symptom then, whether it's in the GI tract, in other words, did the virus start to attack the gastrointestinal system? Did the virus start to attack the respiratory system? Did the virus start to attack the muscular system? Depending upon where the virus attacked, you're going to feel the symptoms. So what we're dealing with a viral attack is accelerated cell death. Accelerated cell death overloads the immune system. Once the immune system is overloaded, the nerve receptors are going to pick up this accelerated cell death, and you're going to end up with a symptom, some signal mediated by the neurological system that the rate of cell turnover is infinitely too fast. And once that occurs, the inflammatory process is going to get stimulated, so a bomb is going to go off based upon the fact that the cell turnover has exceeded the normal rate and an alarm goes off. Now, once you start an inflammatory process, you're going to have to turn then to picture number 11. Take a look at picture number 11. Just don't get overwhelmed by it. Just take this into your body. Picture number 11 is basically the inflammatory swamp that your body has to deal with so that it can mediate a healing. And that inflammatory swamp now is going to include, look in the upper right-hand corner of that picture. That inflammatory swamp is going to include an army of macrophages, an army of dendritic cells, an army of mast cells, an army of T lymphocytes, an army of B lymphocytes, an army of plasma cells, an army of antibodies. Macrophages, dendritic cells, mast cells, lymphocytes. There's a battalion of different nations of soldiers coming in, and they're dying while they're trying to deactivate that virus. So when you have a tissue then that's inflamed, it's symptomatic. Say it's a cough down in the bronchioles. Say it's in the respiratory tract. Say it's in the intestinal tract. Say your muscles are aching. Your entire immune complex is dealing with a ton of immune system cells that are bumping into each other in the attack and dying. You're dealing with the healthy immune system cells. You're dealing with the invading virus. You're dealing with the dead virus. You're dealing with all the cytokines and histamines. You're dealing with the fibrin that gets laid down into that tissue to try to contain the inflammatory response. It's a mess. And I think that picture, picture actually represents that inflammatory process beautifully. So when you're symptomatic, then you've got an entire sludge bar of different types of cells, each trying to mediate and keep you above the symptomatic line. And in that way, you mitigate your symptomology. So you think of flu, you think of symptom, you think of inflammatory response, you think of everything I just said, and now the question becomes, what are you going to do about it? All right, if you've got that, you can get to the deeper understanding of why we get sick, why we don't get sick, how fast we get sick, and how fast we heal. Again, this depends upon your fundamental understanding of what we mean by the terrain. Now you can activate and take action based upon understanding of this giant mess we just described that we call the first 24 hours of a viral infection. So take that picture in. Look at picture number 10. And that's a fantastic picture of a virus. That's picture number 10. It's a fantastic picture of a virus. And what they've blown up is basically the virus trying to attach to receptor sites in the membrane of a respiratory tract cell. Look at that big picture in the lower right-hand corner. It's the surface of the respiratory tract cell, the lipid bilayer. There's a fat sandwich, a bilayer of fat that we call the cell membrane. And that membrane is going to be somewhat resistant to the invasion via the virus. As that membrane breaks down, you're going to accelerate the rate at which the virus enters and exits. So that's that Star Wars-like invader there, hitting the membrane, looking for the site, eliciting that response. Good. Now, what's your body going to do as you have an accelerated rate of cell death? Well, it's going to call in its own invaders. And this is in the realm now of the immune system. But what's the difference between you and the other guy? First and foremost is the number of immune system cells. And second, and this is variable, not only is the number variable, but the next issue becomes, what is the motility? What is the aggressivity? How mobile are those cells? Do they just come in and do the lazy job, or are they highly aggressive, seeking out and looking for that invader to destroy? And that variability in the aggressiveness of the immune system and the numbers that you can mount towards the healing, those variabilities, in fact, are the first two things that determine whether you get it and how fast you get over it. This is so important. This is never stressed. It's always about what do I do and how do I prevent it in sense of avoid exposure to it. Did you know back in the 80s when AIDS first hit and we finally at least associated the HIV infection to full-blown AIDS, you had pathologists from Matilda Krim right on down the line basically stating in articles, I still have them in my libraries, pointing out that HIV invasion does not mean you get AIDS. You have to overwhelm the immune system after the invasion. And this was sort of curious because the mentality at the time about the HIV virus as a retrovirus was that once it gets in, you're cooked because it'll just deactivate your immune system. And so it went after the very thing that the body uses to prevent it from spreading. And so you were going to die. That was it. You're HIV positive and it's all over for you. And yet, if you read the literature, Krim and others made it really clear. No, is it coming into an immune system that can't handle it? That battle began immediately. And if the rate of aggressivity of the immune response exceeded the ability of the virus to multiply, HIV never meant AIDS. HIV could be handled like the stomach flu. that was left out of the literature, but it was very consistent with science. From smallpox to the Spanish flu of 1914, 15? Between 1915 and 1920, 20% of Europe wiped out to basically the flu, the yearly flu. Some got it and some didn't. I think it was 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 4. Then there was smallpox. Now, the bubonic plague was bacteria. Different story, but here's the point. We tell people that it's the differences in your genetics that determine whether or not you're going to respond successfully or unsuccessfully to a potential virus. Say Ebola. Some people get it and they get over it, and some people get it and they die. And this is the issue now, and Ebola may or may not spread. It may or may not be contained. Really, why we're listening to the CDC or looking for that herb, which is in a sense such, I mean, it's a good shot. You got to understand the context in which I criticize this notion, what herb would I take for Ebola? I only criticize it in that if we're leaving out all the fundamentals and just running to the herb, we're not respecting the way herbs work. Herbs need the very same terrain to thrive that you do. Overlooking that and just relegating a lifestyle that's really not built for health and just putting it on the back of an herb, it doesn't work. That's just the sensationalism of herbal medicine. And when medical doctors attack that, they're correct to attack that. At the same time, if you understand how the herb works and you can put the herb in a terrain, then the herb is a welcome ally. And this is where we're always trying to delineate in the show. But as far as why some people are going to die of Ebola and why some people died of HIV and why some people die of Hep C and why some people died of smallpox and why some people died of the Spanish flu and why some people are going to die from Epstein-Barr as it mutates to cancer is a matter of how aggressive are your immune system cells and how many can you produce. Now, you see, how many you can produce is relative to, are they on vacation in the first place when the invader gets in? In other words, if you produce, let's just say theoretically, 1 billion immune cells a day, let's just say theoretically, you have 1 billion ready to go. In any given moment, are most of that 1 billion already working? Or are they just hanging out, smoking cigars in your intracellular fluid and saying, I've got nothing to do. And the minute something comes in there that they don't like, all 1 billion collapse on it. Or are they all diffused? You see, the British Empire fell. Why? The British Empire fell because it was overextended. Its immunity was so diffused over the globe that finally it had to compromise its agenda. Because it only had so many troops with the greatest navy and so on and so forth in the world at the time. The golden age of the British Empire met its collapse when it overextended itself. That is what happens to your immune system. So when these things like Ebola or the winter flu that's coming get into your bloodstream, if you're already overextended, if you've got too many infections already, if you've got too many biofilms, infectious sacs that hide the infections, if the collective infective titer, the amount of infection in your body, is exceeding your ability to have enough of a reserve immunity, then when that flu gets in, you go down. Now take that perspective to the bank, because that really, that's what's determining who gets sick and who doesn't get sick. How overextended is your immune system? That aside, how extended is your immune system is another consideration. How aggressive are those cells? Number one, if you're not sleeping, you will not have immune system aggressivity. Number two, if in fact you are under stress, your immune system will get stupid. Remember, look it up yourself. Do the Google search. Psychoneuroimmunology. Psychoneuroimmunology. The ability of your complement system of immunity, meaning your lymphocytes and your antibodies, that which combats viruses, to swap heads and create through genetic engineering of its own, answers to impending viral infections, is under the control of the neurological system. And yes, I do mean the autonomic nervous system. If you're confused and you're lost, because this is the first time to the Medici Show, welcome. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health, straighttalk.cc. Get to the website. If you can take this into yourself, you'll get to the other level of nutrition. Did you hear that? We've got the best oncologists in the world today doing work on cancer, doing work in psychoneuroimmunology, basically telling us that the complement system of the immune system, its own genetic intelligence, that it uses to respond to these weird infections like Ebola, like HIV, so on and so forth, is mediated through the nervous system, psychoneuroimmunology. That is cutting edge. We didn't have that branch of medicine 20 years ago. So understand, one, if you're not sleeping, you don't have an intelligent immune system. If you're under too much stress, you don't have an intelligent immune system. You see this all the time. You see it with the people in their 30s, 40s, 50s that come down with these weird viral infections, these weird second level manifestations from the simple flu. You know, you had the simple flu and then all of a sudden you had meningitis. You had the simple flu and all of a sudden you've got chronic pneumonia. You have the simple flu and all of a sudden your brain's inflamed with some noxious secondary bacteria. Invariably, you see people manifest these things, and underneath it all, their immune system has been paralyzed to begin with. We start the analysis once we have the infection. This is such a wasted perception. Now, we'll get to some of that, but you got to act really fast. So remind me to remind you about that little window of time. If once it's too late, it's not really too late, because you do have a little window of time, and I'll delineate that in a moment. So, you understand what a virus does. We're not going to get to bacteria today. You understand how it multiplies. You understand how it blows apart a cell. You understand how that stimulates the inflammatory process. You understand all the immune system cells and fibrin and so on and so forth that gets laid down in response. You understand that hopefully you can mount a powerful, aggressive immune system attacked with a whole reserve of special invaders made to help you. You understand all that. If you understand all that, that's wonderful. Now, furthermore, do you understand that all those dead cells have to be removed? That in fact, how long a cold lingers is also related to the garbage that builds up and what removes those dead cells. Your organs of excretion. Suppose you're the type that doesn't poop twice a day. Suppose you're the type that doesn't sweat. Suppose you're the type that never knew what a gallbladder flush was. Suppose you're sclerosing in your biliary system. Suppose you just don't move bile. Suppose your portals of exit are so clogged. Suppose your intestines from all the sugar, immunoparalyzing sugars and carbs that you're eating, cheap junk food, on the rush, on the go, no time to eat correctly. Suppose you have already greased up, built up, hogged up, fatted up, and you can't get anything that's dying in your body out anyway, and then one of these space invaders gets in and starts wreaking havoc on you. Even if you had an aggressive immune system, how are you going to get it out? So now there's another part. There is a reason you didn't get it, but the other guy did. And that reason has to do with how do you get it out. So, you're going to use these concepts in a moment when we talk about, oh, I feel that scratch in my throat. I feel that little tickle there, and I just got off the jet. I just took that 24-hour flight around the world, and I started to feel a little raspy in the throat. Oh, I thought it was a food that I ate that gave me diarrhea, but I guess it was the beginning of the stomach flu. You know, I've had this tension in my kidneys. I didn't even notice it until it got really bad, uncharacteristic. You know, I always have that tension, but this tension's even a little worse. You're going to know what to do. Let's keep going. Turn the pages. Now. If you don't have a relationship with mucus, yes, mucus, because in that big snotty picture number 11, don't blow it up, just look at it, is a ton of mucus. When I say fibrin, I mean mucus. You have lots of mucus cells in the intercellular space, and once the fibrin's there, the mucus gets laid down. It turns it to sludge, like I said. You have to have a relationship with mucus, do you? Have you ever noticed sometimes when you get the flu, you start having diarrhea and you stop eating? We'll talk about relationship with mucus. What a weird show, huh? Do you have a relationship with mucus, and what does that have to do with beating the flu? I'll tell you. All that cell death and all that immune system cell death and all that overload that's got to get out better mean that you have at least an association with, did you ever get the flu and you stop eating because you don't have an appetite? And you get the flu and you start resting because you have no energy. And all of a sudden, you start having copious bowels. Maybe it's a stomach flu anyway. But haven't you ever noticed that as you're dropping all that stuff out of your guts, you start to feel better? Yes, you have. You've noticed that when you drop all that garbage out of your guts, when you defecate it all out, diarrhea, your stomach flu feels a little better. Your chest opens up, your head opens up, and your muscles ache less. You know why? Because if that portal of exit, your large intestine, is open, then you're going to drop out a lot of what's clogging up your body. Picture number 11. You've got to move it out. So you've got to enhance bowel flow. Now, in that bowel, if you're lucky, is this yellow-green stinky substance called bile. We're not going to get into that. For those of you who've listened to the show, you know why. It is, haven't I said enough, that yellow-green fluid that you see with diarrhea has mucus and that yellow-green fluid. And if you've got the flu, if you've got the head cold, if you've got the chest cold, if you've got the muscle ache, if you've got the stomach flu, that yellow-green fluid and the mucus, and anything you can do to enhance that out of your body cleans and removes that inflammatory swamp I just described. So even if you had an aggressive immune system and a healthy immune system response, we're going to get to you if you don't, but say you do, you still got to get it out. Here's a little solution. Go over there to picture number 25. I don't recommend this to everybody all the time, but get to know Dr. Schultz, that intestinal formula number one. That is the grand poop powder of the day. It can be a little harsh, so you got to start real easy, even half a capsule for some of you. But you won't get hurt then. Work your way up until, if you're sick, like, let's just say around the holidays, right? You know what you're going to do at Thanksgiving or maybe Halloween or maybe Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate. You know what you're going to do. You're going to go way overboard. And let's say, yeah, you get nailed with it, the winter flu, just when you got to go back to work on Monday. Get pooping. Get something. Doesn't have to be Schultz number one. Get anything that makes you defecate. Do not do enemas when you're coming down with the flu. Do not do enemas. Do not do colonics when you're coming down with the flu. 9 times out of 10, enemas or colonics when you're coming down with the flu will mean your colon spasms, and most of what wants to come out of your body just recirculates back in, and you super poison yourself just at the wrong time. Now, that's not a piece of information written in stone, but most people, when they're coming down with the flu, don't respond well to the enema colonic thing. Yeah, high fever back in the 20s with the MDs. Okay, to bring down a fever, do a water enema. But we're not talking 1920. We're talking today when people plug up over the holiday on cheeseburgers and pizza and Coca-Cola and sugared donuts and the rest of it, pastries, the whole thing, and you just got to get that sludge out. do that fast, but not with an enema. Do it with some sort of a purgative formula. Schultz number one is fantastic, and do it to the point where you have that slightly uncomfortable diarrhea. I want you to do it to the point where you have that slightly uncomfortable diarrhea. So what? You know, people have such hang-ups about diarrhea. Ladies, you were first in line on this one. So what? You went to the bathroom 7 or 8 times and it was watery. It doesn't matter. To beat the flu, it's well worth the little bit of inconvenience. Do enough. Ramp it up. Start with 1, get to 2, or just dive in and take 3 or 4. And if you're on the bathroom 10 times because it was more than you normally would have or should have taken and you found out the hard way, you're not going to get hurt. Get out that stinky yellow-green stuff with a lot of mucus so that your immune system, assuming that your immune system is active, assuming that you get your sleep, assuming that you've got some pretty strong immunity, assuming that your red blood cells or your bone marrow are producing enough immune system cells, assuming that your immune system cells are not overloaded by all the other chronic infections you're living with, assuming that you're just not one self-contained mass of tension where nothing moves, assuming that if your immune system's going after that exogenous invader, that virus, that nasty Ebola, or that winter flu, and you can poop it out fast, you're way ahead of the game. Now add to that the importance of a patent biliary system. Are you moving bile regularly? Because if you're decongested in that biliary tract, then you're going to get all that intracellular muck out into the blood, into the biliary system, and then out the other end really fast. And you know what? You're barely going to get sick then. Now, exogenous invaders. Let's talk about picture number 10 again. I'm going to bring you back to that gorgeous picture. You see how that's the surface of the respiratory tract? That big thing's going into the surface of the respiratory tract? Okay. Suppose it's not the respiratory tract that virus invades. It's your muscle. That's right. You're hanging out. You're fine. You get a little cold in your back the next morning or sometime in the evening. You wake up and you've got that muscular tension. You want to pop out of bed in the morning, and yet you feel like you've gotten hit by a truck. And you go, uh-oh, it's not in your throat. It's not in your GI tract. It's in your muscular system. Guess what you need to do? If you're strong enough, you need to sweat. Sweating to enhance lymphatic flow. The lymphatic system will take the virus out and those dead cells faster than the speed of light if you can sustain this process, this thermogenic process, whereby if it's in the muscular system, you start sweating. Now, if it's in your respiratory system, I don't know about sweating. If it's in your GI tract, I don't know about sweating. But the muscular flu, exogenous wind heat or damp heat that comes in from the outside that makes your muscles ache, if you catch it early, and I'll pause now to talk about this window of time I was referring to earlier. Window of time. That means you're traveling for the holidays. You're doing more travel just before the holidays for your work. You're doing all of this, and you feel in the midst of your crazy day that ever so slight tickle in the throat. That's when you've got about 2 hours to nail it. You wait to the evening because you missed that little scratch in the throat. It's too late. You blew it. Don't blow it. If you don't want the flu this winter season, one thing you do is listen. You listen to your body because you have a very small window of time. Now, let's go back to how I set the story earlier. What does that window of time mean? It means if you've, say, ingested a billion viruses, someone sneezed in your face and you got a billion of them in your body, and your immune system can handle that, before those viruses start multiplying, you can destroy the invader immediately and never get it. And some of you, it's just your common sense, some of you already know how possible this is. You know, I thought I was coming down with it and I beat it. Or, you know, I came down with it for 3 weeks, but come to think of it, you know, I could feel that thing trying to get in. 2 or 3 times I felt sick, but then the next day I felt fine. Think about that. Think about that. That's your body in retrospect, beating it the first time, beating it the second time. There's always a balance of trade upon an exogenous initial attack. You've got that window there. If you catch it, then you can destroy it before it exceeds your immunoresponse. So you got to catch it in the GI tract. You got to catch it in your muscular system. You got to catch it up when you sniffle. Now, if it's in your muscular system and you catch it, here's what I call, here's a power move. This is a power move. And I'm calling it a power move. It means you got to have strength to do this. If you're an athlete, if you're younger, if you're pretty darn healthy, here's a power move for the flu. It's a sweep. You're on that jet. You feel that little scratch. Better yet, you feel that little muscular ache. Get into an infrared sauna right away and start sweating. Get into a banya sauna. Check my other shows out on the saunas. Get into a banya sauna and do 3 or 4 cycles of hot cold. Check my other shows for specifics on that. But get your body sweating. Feed yourself the electrolytes and then get home, wrap yourself up in blankets, wrap yourself up in hot packs, and take lots of warming soups, lots of garlic, lots of onions, lots of peppers. Make yourself defecate. Make yourself sweat. Keep yourself hot. Keep yourself warm. Drink your fluids and sweat. This doesn't work for a respiratory tract, usually. This doesn't work for the GI tract. And if you're weak, if you're too weak, if you're too emaciated, if you're not strong, thus I call it a power move, you're going to get worse. You want the worst flu of your life? Feel yourself with some muscular ache and go into a sauna. Go try to sweat it out. And you know what you find? You gave yourself a flu that's 10 times worse. It'll drop into your lungs faster than the speed of light because you weren't strong enough. How do you know who's who? Well, you see, this is the thing, guys. You have to study your body. This isn't cookbook. If you're looking for cookbook, listen to another show. This is the show that asks you to listen to you, to create a relationship with you, so you develop an arsenal of intelligent choices mediated by intelligent bodies that know thyself. If you're new to the show, wow. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you are sick, if you are confused, and you want an education, herbal, counseling, the whole works, call that number. You come in and see me if you're serious. To me, as a doctor, it's the only perspective that delivers. It'll take you to places you never thought existed. There is a vast, vast, vast science and art to healing everything. And in the end, the doctor doesn't do it. You do it yourself. Doctors are just facilitators and mediators. 714-850-1007. Don't get the flu this winter. All right, the power move. If you're strong enough, and it's in your musculoskeletal system, go for it the way I described it. Now, if it's in your respiratory system, if it's in the throat, here's a couple of quick fixes. If it's in the throat, carvacol, oil of oregano. I think Bob Marshall's, that's Premier Research Labs, that carvacol is top-notch, as is all his products. Take it and gargle with it. Diffuse it with some water and gargle with it, and gargle with it, but you got to get it early on. I'm talking the first 2 hours. Once that throat's lumped up, you lost it. Oil of oregano, wonderful. Why? Well, you can get the oil to the site. You can get the oil to the site. If the site of attack is deep somewhere in your body where you can't get to, you got a big problem. But if you got a sore throat, they're so nasty. I just can't stand sore throats, right? Isn't that the worst thing you can get? But at least you can stick your finger down your throat and touch your throat. You can bathe it in an anti-infective, and if you can get it early, you can nail it. Now, I want to bring in another approach, the oils. I put on the website the oils. So we're going to get to some of these quick fix remedies here if you can get it early. Another one is nucleotide. Now, what is a nucleotide? Very briefly and quickly, because we're not going to do a show on DNA today. Just look at picture 28. You don't even need to blow it up. There's our good old DNA. And the DNA, well, actually, let's blow this one up. That DNA is made of nucleotides. Those little figurines there of chemicals. Those are your purines and pyrimidines, adenine, thymine, guanine, cytosine. Those little chemical structural formulas there to the side of the big blue ring. Those are nucleotides. And nucleotides are in cells because cells have DNA. And when your virus kills your cells, when it blows open your cells as it reproduces itself, the rate-limiting variable, in other words, what your body, even if it moves all the sludge out, even if you mount a wonderful immune response, you have one problem. You've got to rebuild the cells faster than the virus is taking them down. Now you can pat yourself on the back for your understanding here. You understand now what the flu is. The flu asks your immune system to activate, can it? The flu asks your cells to reproduce fast enough in response to the rate of cell death. Can you? Well, nucleotide is a great solution for that. Well, really, underneath that, are you protein deficient? Are you essential fatty acid deficient? Are you anabolic? Are you a prosperous, developing, expanding organism, or are you shrinking and dying anyway? But just as a matter of course, the reason you pop those nucleotides down, that's a product called Nucleoimmune. The reason you put that into your body, the reason it was a Swiss patented flu formula, the reason is those cells are dying so fast that your body can't make enough of the nucleotides to repair your body fast enough to get you feeling good again. So you've got then what? Something like Carvacol. You've got the nucleotides. Let's get to another quick fix mechanism that, if you get it early, can be very powerful. Look at picture 26. I want to introduce you to somebody. Young Living Essential Oils. This guy, Young, he's somewhere out there in the Midwest, produces a good oil. Premier Research Labs has some good oils like Carvacol, eucalyptus oil, but they don't have as many oils anymore. This guy's got a good oil. Get to know that company. Look at the flu bomb recipe. I put it on there. 40 drops of lemon, 20 drops of frankincense, 20 drops of oregano, 20 drops of thieves oil, 20 drops of peppermint, so on and so forth. Oregano, thyme, eucalyptus, peppermint. They didn't put hyssop there, right? Hyssop. We're going to discuss hyssop. I tried to get an article on hyssop that would make sense for you, but it was too technical, so I didn't put it on. Hyssop oil. We're not talking about herbs now. We're talking about oils. Why do we want to talk about oils when you're sick? Because oils are like the IV infusion. Oil is the bomb when you're coming down with the flu. Get to know oils. Forget the herbs. Not really, right? As a matter of course, though, you're missing out if you don't use the skin. Take a combination of those oils, especially hyssop in the upper body, hyssop on the neck, hyssop on the face, hyssop in the other chest. Then there's castor oil. Then there's castor oil with eucalyptus. Why? Well, if you could get your body hot, say in an infrared, or if you could put a hot pack of sorts on your chest, a hot pack on your kidneys, a hot pack on your lower abdomen, depending upon where the problem was, okay? And you could get that area hot. If you could stand an infrared sauna, if you were healthy enough to do it. If you could stand a Banya sauna and then come out with your pores wide open, about to jump into the covers, and you could take a ton of hyssop oil, frankincense, or peppermint, eucalyptus, thyme oil, and you could marinate it into your chest, your neck, you've got an IV drip into your body. You want to get to your intercellular fluid? You want to get to those cells faster than the speed of light, better than an herb, use an oil. You got to use a good oil. You got to use a non-solvent extracted oil. You have to use a concentrated oil. You've got to get the body hot. The difference between a cold body with an oil and a hot body with an oil is like night and day. You're talking about 100 times the rate of infusion. There's no comparison. People don't heat the body up correctly when they use an oil. Now, you can inhale an oil. That's another way to do it. And inhaling the oil, you may need a carrier oil. You can lift your head up with lemon, balm, lavender, tangerine, jasmine, orange blush. They're antidepressant oils. The attars from India can be used as antidepressant oils. But when you've got the flu, a lot of times you've got to use them with a carrier oil. And you can see websites and all sorts of things on YouTube about how to mix these things. People think oils are bunko. Oils, if the oil's good, if the oil's concentrated, if the oil's with the right carrier, if the oil is done when the body is hot, is like an IV drip of an antibiotic into your body. The studies don't tell you that. The studies just study the oil. The studies don't think about application and how to get it through the GI tract. Lots of times, what you put into your body that you want to get to your cells will not withstand the acids of the GI tract. It will not be absorbed through the GI tract. There's all sorts of problems absorbing what you want to defend you. Your allies don't get to where they need to go because they can't get through the sludge because they're not transported in or because the GI tract just dissolves them. So when you go through the skin then, especially a hot skin, erythema, in other words, you get your skin hot. This is the power of castor oil. If you're coming down with that chest cold and you don't want that to develop into a bad bacterial infection, so now we're going to get to bacteria, but I'm not going to get too into bacteria. If it's in the throat and shucks, you beat the window. I mean, you missed the window. And now it's in the throat and you don't want that terrible thing to happen, right? It drops into your chest and now you're 4 weeks. You get hot. You put that eucalyptus on your hot red chest. And then you take that castor oil and soak it into the flannel and you put that on your chest. And you make sure you do that every single night. Now, if you're dealing with a chest cold, understand something. The chest, the lung, has a relationship with two other organs, your large intestine and your kidneys. You know this one, right? You've been partying too much. It's the holidays too much. It gets cold too much. You're sedentary too much. You got constipated from too much cheese on the pizza too much. And all of a sudden you get the scratchy throat and then it drops into your lungs. And now you're plugged up, right? You're plugged up like a marshmallow and you feel that cough coming on. And oh man, the fever comes up and you might be out for 4 to 6 weeks now. If I were you, I'd get to pooping it out fast. But another thing I'd be doing right away is I'd be getting castor oil on my kidneys. Eucalyptus on a hot kidney, castor oil on top of that eucalyptus with the flannel, and you keep it in there every night because the kidney is the lung. The large intestine is the lung. If you can poop it out fast and support the heat in the kidneys, then the heat will come up to the lung from the kidneys, okay? And the heat and decongestant oil into the large intestine will cause you to defecate it out on top of the herbal cleanse you're doing to defecate it out. That's a good way. And if you're only of moderate strength, you can still do this. Got to remember, everything on this show is almost superfluous if you're too weak. If you're too weak, you're out. See, this is why the ounce of prevention is worth the pound of cure. This is why things work and they don't work. If you take 20 people and put them in a study or 100 people and they're already too weak to do this, you've eliminated the possibility of 3/4 of all these herbal health holistic remedies working in the first place. You got to have a ground matrix. You got to have a foundation for all this flu stuff to work. That's the first qualifier with all of the stuff that they don't tell you. They don't tell you when they give you the herb and they don't tell you when they do the studies. if you're new to the show. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. StraightTalk.cc. If you're driving, when you get home, get to that website. If you're sick, if you're confused, if you're lost, if you're spinning, if you tried everything and anyone else and no one's given you the education to get you healthy, 714-850-1007. If there's one thing I do well, it's get you empowered with knowledge, and you will work. So if you're one of those quick fix artists that's just looking for another doctor to find and give you the magic bullet, don't call that number. If you're chronically sick and disgusted and you really need a sincere approach, you give it a call. 714-850-1007. All right. I've put these articles on. I've got to absolutely at least let you look at one article here, and then I want to talk about the mushrooms. But go to the top of the page and look at, click to view the full article on vitamin C. Okay? Click to view the full article on vitamin C. Okay? Now, you got that, right? They're going to mention a guy, Linus Pauling. I showed you a picture of him. Look at that picture on your own. Won the Nobel Prize twice. Almost beat Watson and Crick to the DNA double helix. Definitely one of the three or four great biochemical minds of the century. Gave the last 30 years of his life to studying antioxidants and their relationship to cancer and the common flu. Of course, he's attacked in this article. It's peer-reviewed from the Clinical of Experimental Immunology, 1978. I think they've gotten a little more respectful of Pauling. But this came out in 78. It's almost laughable. Department, Divisions of Immunological Medicine, blah, blah, blah. Read it at the top. Summary. The high concentration of vitamin C in white blood cells and its rapid expenditure during infection and phagocytosis suggests a role for the vitamin in the immune process. Evidence published to date shows an involvement in the migration and phagocytosis by macrophages. What does that mean? It means that macrophages, white blood cells, polynuclear lymph leukocytes, blah, blah, that which eats your bugs, moves faster and eats faster and uses a lot of ascorbate, which is a compartment. It's a dimension of the bioflavonoid. So ascorbic acid, ascorbate, ascorbate's used really fast. They noticed this. Pauling noticed it. Now look at introduction where I put number two. During the last 30 years, the recommended 10 milligrams daily intake of ascorbate. I mean, that was absurd. That was the RDA the last 30 years. It's up to 60 milligrams now. It's absurd. That RDA is lame. But in 78, you'd even publish it. A regimen based upon scurvy prevention has been noted by a number of authors. Recently, the challenge has been led by Linus Pauling through the medical literature. Pauling said 2 grams, that's 2,000 milligrams per day. Pauling argued that you do 2 grams, 2,000 milligrams a day, noting that gorillas ate 4 to 5 grams a day. And you see, this was kind of like that sort of weird thing that made scientists of their day cringe. Didn't make Pauling cringe. Pauling said, I'm looking at mammalians either making their own or eating that much, living longer, doing better. And Pauling said, we're down at 10 milligrams after we've gone through a century or two of scurvy. So Pauling took his scientific skills to the test tubes, to the labs, to the in vivo and in vitro, and came out with 2 grams a day. So the war started. Pauling gave the next 30 years of his life to that war, all the way down to the rat, an animal which does not require dietary ascorbate, meaning animals often make their own. In this case, the rat, the little teeny-weeny rat, synthesizes 30 to 60 milligrams. It synthesizes 3 to 6 times more than we were being told to ingest in the 1970s, pointing out number two, equivalent to 2 to 4 grams a day for an adult human. This essentially empirical argument, that's an attack. Essentially empirical argument is an attack. It means it's not science. Has stimulated a series of clinical trials, many on a large scale and many which have been ill-conceived and poorly controlled. Someday I'm going to do a show on ill-conceived and poorly controlled. I got to tell you, what's ill-conceived and poorly synthesized and controlled are the studies that most scientists tout as the perfect replica of the scientific method. And yes, these studies that this guy is referring to were probably ill-conceived and poorly controlled. A lot of your holistic studies supporting holistic steps are lousy studies. It's bad science. But a lot of those studies that deny these things are worse science. And really, in the end, you're the public. You should. Incumbent upon you is your common sense, which can tell you that hiding under the veil of science is a lot of stupidity very often, because it doesn't jive with your common sense if you got your common sense. And if you don't, it's because you're not listening to your body. Taken together with the fact that vitamin C has been proposed as a remedy for an array of seemingly unrelated diseases, the flu, cancer, arteriosclerosis, it is hardly surprising that the overall action of the scientific community has been one of skepticism. And that's the usual thing. A guy like Pauling as an avatar comes in, does some studies, other yo-yos do studies supporting Pauling, and then more conservative factions of science and the medical community come in and look at the studies and go, this is a joke. Then they do their own studies, and their own studies are worse than the studies that they're attacking. And you are John Q. Public. And you get, well, you get mistreated because you don't understand. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is the show we use to get you to understand. And as always, this show never has enough time. Read that article by Pauling on vitamin C. Number four there on that page, particularly those involving leukocyte mobility. Vitamin C makes your macrophages move fast. Mushrooms. Go to my pictures down there, picture 30 and 31. Mushrooms, shiitake, maitake, cordyceps, reishi. Its beta-glucan component stimulates the macrophage to work faster, stimulates motility, stimulates mobility, same thing. Mushrooms make your immune system more intelligent. Cleansing removes that exudate from that sea of inflammatory garbage. Your emotions make your immune system smart. You got to catch that first 2 hours and act using your arsenal. You've got to be ready for the flu so that if it sneaks in, you nail it to the wall. Case closed. Don't get the flu. Want to know how you're doing? Drop me a line on the comment section, the bottom of the show. You can see down there comments. Tell me between now and the spring how many times you beat the flu so I know you're listening. 714-850-1007. We'll see you next weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.